This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And we are here at Wet Venture 2021.
Wet Venture 2021. Yeah, yeah, it's raining a little bit right now. Unfortunately, it's a quiet sky this morning. We have no aircraft flying. A P-51 did arrive earlier, but nothing is flying now.
And we are joined by a guest we've had in studio many times.
Yes.
But she's a remote this year.
Oh.
COVID. Carrie Ward, how are you, sir?
Sir.
Ma'am. Jeez. Back to the tent.
That's a good start. I'm doing well. How are you both doing? We're miss seeing you in person.
We miss you too.
Yeah, you got to get back over here.
You know, I know. So close and yet so far.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That's probably better that way.
Yeah, it could be. Carrie,
people can only survive 12 minutes in a locked room with us.
Yeah. So, Carrie, what have you been up to lately here?
Well, I am. I'm working at the Library of Congress with the Veterans History Project.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I've been doing that now going on almost four years, and just like a lot of other museums and buildings and operations, you know, with COVID, everything did shut down, but we're very, very pleased to say now that we're back up and open at the library, and we certainly invite anybody who's listening to check us out. We have some timed ticketed arrivals, so you can go online and get a ticket to come see what I feel is the most beautiful building in Washington, D.C.
Okay, sounds like we need to get down there.
And that would be the airport terminal at Reagan International?
No. Library of Congress, she said.
There's a difference.
Those guys can read?
A little bit, but you can get there from the metro. You could take the metro directly from the DCA airport.
Nice. Nice.
So nice and convenient. And we're more than just books. That's the big thing. You know, we have over 170 million items at the Library of Congress. We are the largest library in the world, but only 39 million of those items are books.
Only 39 million?
Only 39 million.
Wow.
So the rest of the materials are things like prints and photographs. If we have anybody who's interested in cartography, we have what's called the Waldseemüller map. It's the first map which ever had the word America appear on it.
Interesting.
We have that as one of the displays at the Library of Congress. We have the Gutenberg, one of the original Gutenberg Bibles. And then, of course, with Veterans History Project, we really focus on those memories.
Okay.
Are these audio memories or are they audio-visual? How are you doing these?
I'm so glad you asked that. So collections for the Veterans History Project come in such a variety of different ways. And that's really because, you guys are great on the radio and you're great to be able to talk, but a lot of folks are going to feel more comfortable wanting to write things down or to show things through photographs or letters or journals or diaries. So for that reason, we've come up with what we call our 30-20-10 mnemonic device, 30-20-10, to help remember the minimums for establishing a collection within the Veterans History Project. So collections could consist of a 30-minute or longer oral history, could be audio, could be video, 20 pages or more of unpublished memoirs, journals, or diaries, or 10 or more original photographs, letters, pieces of two-dimensional artwork, or even other military documents. Once you hit the minimum of one of those three, anything on top of that is just icing on the cake.
I'll bet you found a lot of gold. Now, how far does this Veterans Project go back in time?
Oh, such a wonderful question, because we just celebrated this past October. We just celebrated our 20th anniversary. So a little bit of a history lesson on how Veterans History Project got started. It was a Father's Day picnic in Wisconsin, believe it or not.
Of course.
And Representative Ron Kind was enjoying the outdoors. There was no rain that day. And so he was flipping burgers with his uncle and his father, a World War II and Korean War veteran. And he started to hear them tell stories that even though he grew up with both of them, he'd never heard them tell these stories before. So this was approximately 1999. So he ran inside and grabbed that ubiquitous camcorder that we had back in, 1999.
Yes.
And he starts recording. And he's not doing it just for himself or for, his uncle or his father, but really he's doing it for his two young sons who were toddlers running around at the time, because he didn't know if they were ever going to want to hear directly from them, but this would provide them that opportunity. So coming back to Washington, D.C., started to speak with a couple different members of Congress, and they drafted this legislation, and by October 27th, the year 2000, we had unanimously passed legislation for the Veterans History Project, which enables individuals, organizations across the country to sit down and get to know the veterans in their lives and communities. And then in 2016, they amended the legislation with a really, really important amendment, which now allows, it's called the Gold Star Family Voices Act, and it now allows voices of families of the fallen to be able to share their story and their memories through oral history as well.
That's important too, Gold Star families. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Are you getting like large numbers of submissions per month kind of thing?
Yeah, we do okay. So in the past 20 years, we've amassed over 111,000 collections, and it ranges from World War I up through current conflicts, and it covers just everything in between. We have people represented from all over the country, which is really, really cool. We have a website, which is loc.gov/vets, and it's the portal both for the participatory and the archival side of things. So if anybody is sitting, you know, at AirVenture and realizing it's a bit rainy and no plans are up and they feel like, you know, listening to some oral histories or viewing some photographs, or even we have some really, really cool diaries, including some that are from POWs who didn't have anything to write with. And so what they did is, it was a contraband, it wasn't a diary they were supposed to have, but they put together a diary comprised completely of cigarette labels, can labels, because that was really all they could find. And they were doing this in part to try to keep their minds busy. So one individual that I'm thinking of right now, he started to conjugate Spanish verbs. And another started to write a list of some of the other POW's names so that if he got out of there, he would be able to connect with them later.
Isn't that amazing what the human mind is capable of under such great stress?
Absolutely. It's incredible. And we do have those stories, the incredible stories of individuals who were either POWs, we have the Medal of Honor recipients, but we also have individuals who just blew a desk.
Right.
There's one story where I had the great privilege of speaking to the 2nd Infantry Division. I went to one of their reunions, and I was talking, and I heard this extremely emotional story. And then the next person I spoke with, he was an admin officer, and he told me about how he had served stateside during the Korean War, and apparently paper clips were a hot commodity. So he would gather up all the paper clips that he could find, and if he could gather them all up, he could trade them almost like currency for cherry pie. One of those things you would never think of, but it's so neat, these little things.
What's
also neat is he really felt so strongly, you know, connected to the individuals that he wasn't serving with, but maybe he did some training with, that he dedicated the rest of his life to trying to serve veterans, which I just think is
wow. That's amazing.
That's very amazing.
Yeah.
So you have a very rewarding job.
I like it.
You sound like it.
It's interesting. A slight tangent. We've had some family work we've been doing, and we found some stuff of military records and possessions that we never knew our uncles had. We found a silk escape map of France. Didn't know that was there. We found his original Army Bible. It's like, wow. They never talked about their service. All of our uncles served in different branches. None of them, including our father, ever talked about what they did.
And there's a tremendous family picture from right after the end of World War II of two of our uncles and our dad in uniform together. I mean, it's just, it's a really neat photograph.
So,
I'm so glad you have that.
What is your advice to families that have a veteran that has never told his story?
You know, that happens a whole lot. A lot of times veterans choose not to tell their story for whatever reason. Our big thing is this is their story to tell their way. So we want to make sure, no matter what, that the veteran or Gold Star family member is comfortable. If they aren't ready to tell their story, we certainly don't want to push them. We do have, you know, you had mentioned some of the articles that you had found. We do accept posthumous submissions. And what's really neat is I'll just tell you a quick story about a World War I veteran named Albert John Carpenter, who had a little pocket diary. And he took it over to France, and he starts it with, "October, the most eventful month of my life." And he goes on, and he talks about the artillery, the mudding, the gassing, and everything we know the Great War to be about. And he comes home, and he puts his diary away, and just like you said, he never, ever talked about it. And so, unfortunately, after he passed, his daughter-in-law said, you know, it's really important that we do something with this material. We were very lucky that they chose to donate it to the Library of Congress. And in doing so, we have a remarkable preservation and conservation lab. We were able to take the tears in the pages and repair it with Japanese tissue paper. There were some pages that were so badly water damaged that you couldn't read them, but with a proprietary chemical under ultraviolet light, for the first time ever, we were able to extract what was written on those pages so the family could see it.
Wow.
We also have a bookbinding machine, so it was kind of cool because we were able to bring everything back to what its original format was. And so that's a little bit about part of why we hope somebody would consider donating some of those materials, because it is a safe, secure environment. You know, it's humidity-controlled, climate-controlled, but also for research value. We work a lot with different researchers and students. However, the veteran maintains the copyright. So if Ken Burns comes and wants to use, you know, part of Edward Nixon's collection, we send them directly back over to the veteran or the next of kin to get permission.
Okay. Real quick, we're out of time. What's that website again?
It is LOC for Library of Congress.gov/vet, V-E-T-S.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for joining us, Curry. Hopefully we'll get to see you next year here in person.
In person, please.
I hope so. Thank you both, and stay dry out there.
Not happening right now. All right.
Take care, Curry.
I'm Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie, and this is EAA Radio.